with your hosts, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and let's talk legal.
And Cecil and Wes are in the studio here now and waiting for your calls, too, at 800-818-2255. Our local number is 247-7282-353-4674 or 247-7282. Good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
Good morning, Ben. How are you?
Doing well. Hope everybody is okay. And so what are we talking about today?
We're going to talk about elder law and asset protection, elder law planning, sometimes called Medicaid planning today, Ben. We talked about that on the program before. Haven't really talked about it much over, you know, the past several months, I don't think, based on my recollection.
But I know as we've gotten around the holidays, too, it's in closer to holidays when families get together, it's a good time to talk about these things.
That's right. You know, our aunts and uncles and parents and grandparents, they get older, and obviously we're all getting older, but nevertheless, the need is there at some time. You know, when we're talking about long-term health care expenses, we're talking about potential of nursing home, assisted living, you know, these type issues, and the cost of that is very expensive. So it's important for people out there to understand the different options available to them. So over the next 2 or 3 weeks, we're going to talk about you know, that topic.
Right. And if you have questions, you can give us a call on that. So where do we begin?
And in and around this issue or this subject of elder law, Ben, you is you know, the kissing cousin, if you will, which is just basic estate planning. One really does have to analyze right at the beginning of the file the integrity of the estate planning documents, and more specifically, you know, that infamous power of attorney. You know, does it have gifting language? Does it have the right to make certain transfers? Does it have the right to sign for certain applications that might become important relative to applying for Medicaid,
right,
and certain other documentation like the intent to return home. So you know, as we begin any file with any family, one of the most important things we're going to do right at the beginning is to analyze the estate planning documents. And of course, as the planning then begins to kind of come together and unfold, many times the will, the last will and testament, needs to be altered if possible so as to just conform and confirm some of the intention relative to really the elder law planning side of the file, the asset protection side of the file. I mean, if we're going to protect an asset, Ben, we're going to protect say a family farm or a family home place. And if the will, if all of a sudden the client is wanting that to go to two of the three children, but the will leaves the property to all three children,
right,
then the left hand and the right hand are not very well coordinated. And the job of a good elder law lawyer is going to make sure that all of the pieces of the puzzle are well coordinated and dovetail together so as to make this situation not only during the remainder of the life of the elder person, but then when we go to administer their estate, that it's a smooth and efficient process.
Okay, so where do you want to start here when people are coming into the office and get started?
Yeah, well, the most expensive level of care is skilled nursing care. So I think that's probably the best place to start, and that really when we're talking about Medicaid, you know, that's really what we're talking about when it relates to elderly people. So when we're talking about a skilled level of care, you know, just from a basic perspective, I think that all of us hope that our loved ones don't ever have to go into a care facility. The statistics don't support that, however.
Yes, that's right.
And, you know, Ben, I get the comment all the time from clients that, you know, that's fine. We're just going to take care of her at home until she passes away or he passes away, and we can do that and we have time. But, you know, the truth of the matter is what I see more often than not is that, you know, we don't really have control over that situation at some point in time in their lives.
Yeah.
When that comes up normally is when there's maybe a hospitalization and then the discharge from the hospital, the decision is made that they individual does not need to be discharged home because we need a higher level of care. They're then discharged into a skilled nursing facility mm-hmm. for maybe a rehab period.
Right.
And maybe that rehab period, which is normally a 20-day under Medicare rehab period, does work.
Mm-hmm.
And we get rehab back to the point where we get our strength back. We're able to go back home. But maybe it doesn't. And if it doesn't, then, hey, we then stepped over, you know, beyond what Medicare
right.
will cover, and we may be there for an extended period of time.
You know, it's interesting because in my ministry, I have this conversation sometimes, and often it may be with maybe a 45 or 50-year-old who's talking about their parents who are now in their, maybe their late 70s, but by the time it comes around to when they're actually going to be taking them home and taking care of them, they're in their 60s and their parents are in their mid-80s.
That's right.
And that's a different story.
Right.
And you just, and so many people are not equipped.
There are twists and turns in every family,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I have seen certainly successful situations where children have been able to take care of their parents by living in their home mm-hmm. or living next door to them or those type of situations. But, you know, you have to take each family situation
right.
you know, and analyze it separately.
But you, as you know, I mean, where it comes into play with you guys so often is that people get scared. They get scared that somebody's going to have to take their house, somebody's, you know, that of how are we going to pay for this when it happens. And that's where that comes up, says, well, I'll just take care of them at home. But they're scared of these things and don't take that planning seriously.
Right. Well, you know, we were talking about just a moment ago kind mm-hmm. of the threshold question of, you know, will mom or dad ever have to go into this expensive $5,000 to $6,000 a month,
right?
You know, nursing home situation. But the prudent planner and mm-hmm. the prudent person is going to put a plan in place so that we don't have a problem financially. For example, you know, if the husband ends up having to go into a nursing home and we and it costs us $5,000 or $6,000 a month, and you know, and then mm-hmm. he passes away maybe years later. We want to make sure, even the law supports this very clearly, that the surviving spouse has enough money to live off
right,
of.
Right, right.
You know, and a lack of planning could potentially leave that surviving spouse destitute, which is certainly something that we can avoid if we do some planning. But back to the basics, you know, mm-hmm. when we're talking about long-term health care, we're talking about nursing home expenses. There's really three ways to pay for it. Number one would be private pay.
Mm-hmm.
That means we come out of our pocket for the $5,000 to $6,000 a month in North Carolina. It's more than that in mm-hmm. some other states. But we're talking about North Carolina here today. That's the first way we pay for it. Second way is if we do have long-term care insurance, we would look at, you know, the options with regard to that.
Mm-hmm.
We look at, you know, how much is covered per day. Is there a limitation, you know, per month? Is there a limitation
right.
in the amount of years it will cover? You know, so we need to, you know, look at that. The higher your premium, you know, the more coverage
right.
you can get, of course.
Exactly.
And then the last way that we pay for the long-term health care expenses would be through the Medicaid program.
Mm-hmm.
And the Medicaid program is administered differently from one state to the next, but it's overall a federal program.
Mm-hmm.
So there are different rules in North Carolina as compared to Virginia, South Carolina, any other state. North Carolina has its own set of rules when we're dealing with eligibility. The most basic rule with regard to Medicaid eligibility
mm-hmm.
is that the applicant and their spouse collectively cannot have over $2,000, $2,000 mm-hmm. of countable assets and become eligible.
Mm-hmm.
That is a very basic rule, but there are multiple exceptions to that rule. And the good elder law planner is going to know 99% of those exceptions that are in the law
yeah.
and in the Medicaid manual and
mm-hmm.
And are available in our North Carolina General Statutes and Administrative Code in order to protect the assets
yeah.
in a legal fashion.
That's such a low threshold. I mean, $2,000 in countable assets.
It is. I mean, you look at that, but countable assets is kind of where it's at, Ben.
Right, right.
What is countable? What's not countable?
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to talk about that here in a moment. But also, you know, you look into the law with regard to the Medicaid eligibility. I mean, there's a specific provision with regard to the community spouse,
mm-hmm.
the spouse who's healthy. mm-hmm. that allows the community spouse to keep up to one half of all countable assets up to, it's about a little under $110,000.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so written into the law, there's contemplation there with regard to taking care of that healthy spouse. So mm-hmm. we're not intending to just leave this spouse, you know, destitute.
And we'll talk more about that, too. Elder law planning is our subject, but any civil law question you want to ask, 800-818-2255, 247-7282, 353-4674 with Harvell and Collins, Attorneys at Law. Welcome back to the program here on Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins, Attorneys at Law, as we are talking with Cecil and Wes about elder care planning.
Now, Ben, Wes is speaking of three ways to pay for the long-term care or the nursing care of our loved one.
Mm-hmm.
And he mentioned, of course, those three ways being self-pay, pay mm-hmm. for it out of your pocket. Secondly, maybe have some that in combination with long-term care insurance.
Mm-hmm.
And thirdly, let's see about some Medicaid
right.
options.
Right.
Before we get to that point, let's review this, which are really questions that we get on an everyday basis. What happens here practically is that our loved one, slips and falls or something occurs, some sort of acute something occurs that places them in a nursing facility.
Mm-hmm.
And Medicare, which we're all on, mm-hmm. okay, at this point in our life, will pay for 20 days.
Right.
In the long-term care facility.
Right.
After 20 days, and this is the key, if it can be determined that the care that we're getting at the mm-hmm. nursing facility is rehabilitating us.
Right.
Then Medicare will extend payment up to 100 days. And this makes perfect sense. And we all know people like this. We mm-hmm. have friends
sure.
in our churches who have slipped and broken their hip and they're in the
right.
nursing home for a couple of months. But then fortunately they're able to go back home. And of course mm-hmm. every day they're asking, when can I go back home?
Right.
Medicare
right.
is going to continue to pay up to 100 days because of the fact that that person is under rehabilitation and the medical team is basically affirming that this rehabilitation should rehabilitate this patient to the extent that they're able to return home.
Right. They're showing improvement and
correct.
And a desire to improve.
That's going to be up to 100 days. Mm-hmm. Now, after you get beyond the 100 days, that's when we're kind of at the nut cracking. That's where we get into those three options that Wes was speaking of.
Mm-hmm.
Because now the family is going to be confronted with a couple of things. First of all, the physician is going to be of the opinion that the patient is not able to return home.
Mm-hmm.
And that the patient is going to need to stay in the facility long term.
Right.
And this is an affirmation that is made on a form known as the FL2.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a block or a check mark, if you will, like a prescription that a physician signs saying that he or she is the physician or of the opinion that our loved one is in need of skilled nursing, in need of a skilled nursing facility, or SNF. And that is the block on that form that must be checked in order for us to make application for Medicaid.
Okay.
And we run into, again, dovetailing the facts with the law for the benefit of the client. All of that comes in. Some folks, you know, are in a facility But the doctor really is not at a position to be able to say that the patient is in need of skilled nursing.
Mm-hmm.
It might be that they are still at assisted living
right, right,
level.
Right.
Or it might be that they are at their dementia is such that it is intermittent.
Mm-hmm.
And we again, you know, at times might need some care, but not necessarily consistent skilled nursing care.
Mm-hmm.
And so the medical side of this certification is important. And we work through this very regularly with our clients, mm-hmm. and helping them understand the consequences legally of their physician certifying that their loved one is in fact at a point, at a station in their life where they are in need of long-term skilled nursing care.
It seems like it's a combination of objective and subjective fact. I mean, there's a lot of opinion going on here as well.
That's right. The opinion with regard to the physician, mm-hmm. you know, obviously, because if you don't have that FL2
right.
you know, indicating you need that level of care, then obviously you're not going to be eligible. I mean, that's a threshold issue.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, the more subjective standard is assets.
Right.
But assets in conjunction with application of the law and how those assets are structured is very important.
Hmm.
Right. So if all of those facts come into play, Ben, and you have a person who is beyond the 100-day period,
mm-hmm.
or potentially they went into the nursing facility never under the intention of rehabilitation. They
right.
just simply are at a point where we must now be in a skilled nursing facility.
Right.
And there
right.
never was a hope that they would be rehabilitated to return home.
Mm-hmm.
If either of those two things exist, then the physician is going to be comfortable certifying on the FL2 that they're in need of skilled nursing facility. And that then leads us to the three ways now
mm-hmm.
that a family is going to be confronted as to how do we financially now take care of our loved one.
Mm-hmm. Well, you mentioned that. I don't want to jump ahead, but just kind of maybe a tease that we'll come up to another time. But you mentioned about the Medicare and the threshold, et cetera. And you also mentioned in the preface about something called the intent to return home. And I imagine all of that interplays in here as well. We'll get to more of that coming up in a moment here on Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins, attorneys at law here on the Talk Station. Hey, welcome back. We're talking about elder law planning, elder law with Harvell and Collins, attorneys at law here on the Talk Station. And we've been talking about, you know, the eventual nature of going into a nursing home.
That's right. And, you know, we've led up to the fact that, okay, the doctor has made the determination mm-hmm. that this is the level of care that's needed. And so, therefore, the individual is having to go into the care facility, whether it's after the 100-day mm-hmm. rehab period or whether it's just now time to go.
Right.
All right. So then we get into an analysis of assets and transactions over the past 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
Now, years ago, I think it's been 4 or 5 years ago now as far as when the Deficit Reduction Act was put in place, the law was different with regard to transferring assets.
Mm-hmm.
We saw more planning on the street of things like, let me put the house in Bobby's name, my son's
right,
name.
Right.
You know, let me transfer some money over there. Let me put the car in his name because I'm old, he's young, and mm-hmm. I might need to go to the nursing home. And I heard that they can only look back 3 years.
Right.
Well, that came to an end several years ago. So mm-hmm. that really off the cuff is not good planning. It's not prudent planning because you understand that Medicaid really won't allow you to just gift away assets to mm-hmm. become eligible.
Mm-hmm.
They impose a sanction in the event that that takes place. So the look back period, which is the amount of time that Medicaid can look at mm-hmm. transactions, used to be 3 years. It's now 5 years for all transactions. So they extended that out 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And also another fundamental change.
The point of where you look back is different too, right?
Well, the point of where you, exactly, you're one step ahead of me, Ben. You're a great student.
I'm going back to my notes.
You actually listen when we talk about this stuff.
Yeah.
That's great. So the point where you look back is very, very important because it used to be that the sanction period, meaning the amount of months you would not be eligible for Medicaid, used to run from the date that you made any transactions, any gifts.
Right.
Okay, so maybe if you had you know, a 50,000, you know, 50,000, 40,000, 60,000, something. That's a lot of money, but still in the grand scheme of things, you could gift that away, wait approximately 10 months and become eligible because that sanction period, which is calculated basically by dividing the value of the gift by $5,500, and then you come up with that sanction period, would run from the date you made the gift.
That's the way it used to be.
Made a little bit more sense to go ahead and make a gift, you know, hold your breath here, and hopefully we get out of the sanction period.
Right.
The law changed in, you know, several years ago, and now we're in a situation where all transactions looking back 5 years are sanctionable if they're uncompensated transfers. But the sanction only begins to run upon application.
Right. So when you apply for Medicare.
They add it all up.
They add it all up.
They add it all up. Yeah. It's all
so everything from the last 60 months.
That's right. That's right. So, you know, when we sit down with our clients and we ask them about assets, you know, we ask them, do you own your home? Whose name is it in? Is there a mortgage on it? Do you own any other property? You know, where do you bank?
Right.
You know, do you have any stocks? Do you have a vehicle? You know, we go through that. With the typical just estate planning, you know, file, you don't really care too much about sanctions. But when you're talking about an elder law situation, you have to ask questions about, well, have there been any gifts, transfers of assets in the last 5 years? And if there have been, then we've got to talk about what we can do to basically unravel those. Otherwise, we're just going to have a period of time where there's going to be, you know, no Medicaid for a certain amount of time, depending on what the facts are.
Again, those are all the things that you have to take into account now when planning, and the people do want to turn to for the right advice at the right time at Harvell & Collins, Attorneys at Law. And you can contact them online at harvellandcollins.com. You can reach them at 252-726-9050. Or drop by their office to make an appointment at 1107 Bridges Street in Morehead City. Again, 252-726-9050.